Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Good morning, Facebook Live crew. Paula, I see you in the house. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Sam Mason. Once again, you know, I've been getting a lot of messages. People are like, man, is this guy really a cop? Yeah, I'm the real deal. You know, well, I'm a police officer. I'm not a cop. I'll just say that. I do see a difference. Cops are full of action and adrenaline, and police officers can still help people and know how to get down on one knee and tie a kid's shoe and don't always have to stir up things just to make work for themselves. Sometimes you got to prevent work. But anyway, you're in the right place if you're here, because on this show, everybody's equal. Black, white, rich, poor, Hispanic, Republican, Democrat. And here, the preacher, the politician, the police chief, the police officer, everybody is equal. Everybody. Nobody's word goes above anybody else's word. And here we have that hard talk. We talk about topics. We get down to it. You know, when you guys call in, 646-716-4621, you got time to get on your points and say it the way you want to say it. You know, it's not about how I like it. You can agree with me, disagree with me. And, you know, I learn from everybody. I don't know everything. The purpose of this show is ultimately to have police community relations rebuilt and to bring about police reform. Now, people say, well, you're hard on police. You're hard on police. Well, I'm hard on police. I'm hard on black folks. I'm hard on white folks. I'm hard on rich folks, poor folks, Republicans, and Democrats. Because to me, until we're willing to have the hard discussion, nothing is going to change. You know, there's a demographic of people who are tired of the same old, same old. We're tired of sitting back praying on solutions. We're tired of sitting back waiting, voting people in the office that do nothing but go in and become a bigger part of the problem. So on here, I don't care if you're Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, don't matter. When you call up here, you get to get your point out. You know, this is not an attack show. The only thing I'm going to ask is, unless it's in the context of a quote, let's keep the N-word out, you know, as much as possible, and the B-word. I try to stay out of politics unless it's relevant to the point, because we can beat that issue all the way into the dirt. Today, what I wanted to talk about is, I noticed after every one of these events that we have, whether it was the riots in Baltimore following Freddie Gray, whether it was Ferguson, you know, whether it was Cartersville, every time we have an event, there always comes a parade of promises. You know, the police chiefs come out and they say, well, we're going to get into police, community policing. We're going to change the way we do things. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. None of this ever comes to fruition. Nobody is held accountable. And if they do institute a program, how much play are you giving the community and having a voice in that, in policing? I think that there are several things, and it's from my personal observations and experience, several things that are inside of the dynamics of policing that hinder moving police reform forward that you guys may or may not be aware of. And I just jotted down a couple of them that I see, and you guys can chime in on what you see or you'd like to see, and maybe we can come up with something that I know I've got trolls. I know there's plenty of them, and they might troll across this and listen to it, and if they decide to get on it and take credit for it, I don't care who gets the credit. We just want the reform. And some of the things that I've noticed that seem to be too involved in policing, one of them is politics. Politics is a big part of policing, a very big part. You know, you've got elected, the judges are elected, the sheriff is elected, You've got city council people, and rightfully they should have influence over the police. You've got a police chief that's there. You got a city manager. You got assistant city manager. All these people impact policing. So therefore, what happens when they get behind the closed doors and all the mandates come down? You know, the ultimate goal of policing is to do what? To drop out crime, to make crime go away, to make your neighborhood safer, make my workplace safer. What happens when eliminating crime hurts somebody's bottom line who is making money off of crime? What happens when the investors can't get that land in the bad neighborhood as cheap as they wanted it because crime's no longer there and people are holding on to their property? You know, what happens when a for-profit prison don't have bed space open and the city gets hit, you know, with all these bonds and extra expenses because they're below capacity in their contractual agreement? Then the numbers start coming down. Then the mandate comes down within departments. You know, pick up your numbers. As I said so many times on this show, numbers don't mean a lot to the street officer out there. We're very, if you want to say, just rudimentary creatures. We either prevent crime or react to crime. Ultimately, I think most officers, good or bad, want to go to work and not have to put up with a lot of unnecessary calls and things that are preventable. Family violence, things that take place in the house we can't prevent. But if the mandate is on us to make numbers and we're in an environment where we've worked hard to get rid of the crime and there are no numbers there to be made, then what do we start doing? What have we seen in Baltimore? For those that have followed the show, you know, what do we see in Baltimore? We see the manufacturing of prosecutions. We see planning of evidence. We see doctor police reports. You know, these things start coming about. Then you take that citizen police trust and it's gone. And this comes down because of the mandate for numbers, the political mandate that comes into play. And this is something the community that isn't aware of, and the average street officer that doesn't pay attention to these things may not be aware of, because they're trying to make their numbers or they're going to be fired or they're going to get a bad review. Numbers help the police chief. When the council says, let me see the numbers, is the chief doing good or doing bad? How many arrests do the officers have? Nobody ever seems to want to measure prevention. Nobody ever says, well, bring us the stats on how many less car burglaries we had than last year. Nobody wants to say, you know, how many less murders do we have from last year? See, these are the things that come into play that a lot of people miss. Numbers do not help the officer on the street. He or she will tell you that. I mean, half the time we're up to our neck in calls and you just run and call to call to call. And, you know, you don't have time to worry about numbers. But some departments do mandate. So you guys, first off, ask your local departments. You know, go down there and ask them, do you have a quota system for tickets? Are officers mandated, ordered, directed, different words they'll use, to write X amount of tickets a day? Are they? And get that from them. If they say yes, say, show me, can I get a copy of that policy letter? Because that's something that affects why you're not seeing community policing, because people are trying to make numbers and make revenue. And this is all falling up under the politics tab of this stuff. You know, and it does take place in a lot of medium-sized departments and certainly in a lot of smaller departments where they rely on the revenue from tickets to keep their department afloat within the city, and that's why you see so many speed traps around a lot of smaller cities. Those of you in Texas that go up and down I-35, you know which cities to slow down in before you get there. Thing is, your special interest groups. These people circumvent any plans for good community policing or an implementation of community policing because of their investments in the city. These are your people who have the hyphenated name sometimes, who always have to be in the know of everything, who behind the scenes dictate everything. You all know who they are in your city. You know who they are. These are people who direct how things are going to go, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. These are the very same people that you know, when they get in trouble, their case either won't be prosecuted, may be prosecuted, or will be dropped down to such a low penalty that it's ridiculous. But you all know who they are. These are your special interest people. You know, the people who have the sidebars to the sidebar. You know, and, hey, Paul, how you doing this morning? Then, when you get to your special interest groups, follow the money. follow the money. You've got these departments. You know, a couple of weeks ago we did a show and we talked about some of these settlements. You know, I'm not talking about awards from trials being completed. I'm talking about settlements. And some of these cities are $187 million in a year, you know, $220 million in a year, $57 million in a year. You know, that money could be invested in community policing. But they will tell you it's not financially feasible to look at it right now. We can't look at it right now. When we get done, when you get done paying for the riot, your tax base drop because people take their business elsewhere. Folks move out of the city. You got 7 to 10 years of negative publicity coming because of the riots that you had. And it still does not get through the minds of some of these cities that we have to start somewhere. We've got to start somewhere. And a lot of times it starts with who are you hiring? Who is it that you're giving that badge and that gun to? Does this person fit what the city needs in a police officer and the chief or the city manager's vision for the city? Or do they fit the macho dynamic that the department may have? Do they just look good in the uniform? Never mind if they act good in it or think good in it or speak good in it. They just look good in it. Whose brother is this? Whose sister is this? Whose cousin is this? Some departments, you got half of a family working down there. You know, how did this person get the job? What's this person's record like? Are they prone to snap? When you get officers who have a pattern of aggressive behavior, is this charted? Is it followed? Is it measured, or is it just another piece of paper that goes in the folder behind the other? See, because the public looks at these things. So now you've got lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after negative publicity. You never get around to fixing that problem of police reform within your city because you're too busy putting out fires that shouldn't even be. Is the chief a right fit for that department? I don't care how nice of a guy he is. I really don't. And the citizens don't care how nice he or she is either. Can they effectively manage the people? And this is a big one with officers and police administrations. Is your police administration in touch or out of touch with what's going on in the city? If your department is one of these departments that relies on Facebook and think they know everything because they troll people's posts or they post something up on their own site now and then, they're out of touch. Do the officers have any conversation with the chief? Does the chief come out and ride? Does the assistant chief come out and ride? Do the citizens ever see these people other than on TV cheesing and giving a bunch of statements that everybody in the community who's in the problem knows is either a soundbite or it's not true? And the officers know it's not true. So that breaks up the trust. Does your department have a good old boy system? A whole lot of them do. Some of you may say, I don't know. Some of you officers that are looking at this, or we'll look at it later, or we'll download it later, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So don't act like it's the first time you heard it. The good old boy system is alive and well in policing. It is alive and well. There are some people who get the special jobs. There's some people who don't. There's some people who go on these training trips all across, and there's some people that don't. These are things that affect your hiring. Your hiring affects the police officers you put on the street. Those officers on the street make or break your city. When I go out there at night, anybody who's coming into this city, they're going to judge Waco by how they see me. If I'm arrogant or don't want to be bothered or mean or nice or whatever, that's the vision they're going to get for the city. Do I want to live here? Do I want to do business here? What are all the officers like? They're going to judge them off of me. So departments need to do a better job of picking who they put out there on the street. You know, you need communicators. What is your criteria by which you pick an officer? Okay, criminal history has got to be a big thing. You don't want felons. You don't want people with high misdemeanors in their past. Okay, that's a good thing. What are their communication skills like? Well, they're kind of shy. If they're shy, then they don't need to do this job. This job is 90% talking, from traffic stops to phone calls to taking information for reports to taking statements to testifying in court. This job is 90% communication, and ironically, that's the weakest part of policing right now. That is one of the problems with policing. We don't know how to talk to people, and we don't talk to each other about things that are relevant to making the departments better. One of the other things is pay. Hello, Dallas PD. Pay and benefits. If your department has lousy pay and lousy benefits, you're going to get lousy officers. No potential candidate is going to stay longer than 2 years on a job that doesn't pay good and doesn't have any type of benefits. And I'm not talking about exorbitant amounts of money, because officers don't make as much as some people may think we do, you know. But if you're not paying, those officers are going to go somewhere else. And they're going to go work at a neighboring department. You don't believe me? Ask Dallas about Fort Worth. As soon as those officers get a chance to get out of Dallas and get over there to Fort Worth, a lot of those young guys, that's exactly where they go to. Got a caller in from the 804 area code, 8603. What's going on?
Hey, Brother Stan. How you doing? It's Gus calling from the great state of Virginia.
What's up, Gus?
How you doing, brother? Something you said earlier that was profound to me, man. You're right about the politics and policing, man. The department should be run by professionals, period. And it shouldn't be no on-the-job training either. I don't think it should be on-the-job training. If you got a background in policing, i.e. the military, then, you know, you should be hired. But you also need to have diversity training, too, if you've never been around black folk or Hispanics before. I mean, that all comes into play. And if you're short-tempered with people all the time, maybe that's not the job for you. You know, there's a whole lot of things that go into that, you know, with having a decent run police department. And you're right, politics should stay out of policing. But those numbers is what keeps those politicians rolling, especially with the European-American population. They love high arrest numbers. Well, the police department is doing really well. They're arresting criminals. But on the other hand, they're not looking to see who's being arrested. If you got a population that's 70% white and 30%, you know, African American or whatever, but the jails are 80% African American, then there's an issue there other than, you know, criminal activity.
You know, Gus, you see, now you hit on something, and see, this is how it works. Is you have say you've got a city, in your city we've driven the crime down. So we've got a certain set of numbers that we know historically. We can bring these numbers out and compare them to last year, the year before, and they're going to be significantly lower. So we have that win over there. So when we want to get a grant, you know, you have to produce numbers when you get grants. For instance, we have grant programs where you go out and you write, it's called speed step or seatbelt step programs, and you go out, and if you're working seatbelts, that's what you go look for. For 4 hours or whatever the shift is, it's been a while since I've done it, and it's all over Texas, but it's a state-run grant, and you go out, and that's all you write is seatbelt tickets, and you know you'll write other stuff if you see it, but you have to write X amount of tickets to sustain that grant. And the same thing with speeding. You got to write X amount of speeding tickets. Now, there's good and bad in it, because one of the things that the grant does do is it brings in officers that if you've got an area where people typically speed and there's a lot of accidents, that officer can target that area, and it's not coming out of taxpayers' money for them to be out there working. So there's pluses and minuses to it. But on the other side of it, you know, when you get into where you need numbers all of a sudden, okay, we got to make numbers. These low numbers, yeah, they look good over here to luring people to the city and getting business, but I want to justify my position, whether it's a specific unit, which we see a lot of in policing. If you've got a little specialized unit, whether it's a drug unit, a gang unit, or whatever, and they need numbers, where's the first place they go? Let's go to that poor area of town and go shoot the fish in the barrel. From traffic tickets to barking dog tickets, you know, warrants, everybody's going to jail, because that's a statistic, just like if I arrest you for murder or get 200 pounds of weed off of you. An arrest is an arrest. So you got the best of both worlds in those type of programs. But when you start talking about police reform and you start talking about bringing in community policing and you start talking about problem solving and preventing crime by educating the citizens to assist you in preventing it, not the department going out there and trying to do it. And I think cities sometimes, though they'll tell you differently, they fear the educated citizen. They, you know, the citizen who knows the policies, knows the procedures, knows what officers should or shouldn't be doing, what city council should or shouldn't be doing, goes to these city council meetings. Those are the people that they fear, because people will be held accountable. And I think as we dig into these shows and the further we go, people are going to start to see that the problem with policing is not so much the street officer like people think it is. The street officer is and there's been some guys that done some knucklehead stuff, and I'm not giving them a pass on it by any means. But we have to look beyond sometimes that incident and say, how does this keep happening? There's a problem in the profession somewhere. We talked a little bit about it last week. We talked a little bit about it the week before. But there's something in this profession that is preventing policing from reforming. Yes, officers don't want to recognize reform. They didn't want to recognize racial profiling, which was generational, until Department of Justice came in and said, this is real. This is a real problem. But some of it is because, by and large, policing is largely white males that are in it, and when you're not subjected to profiling, you can't even tell you're doing it. And you're certainly not going to believe anybody that tells you it's happening to them. And then because departments don't talk about race, don't discuss these issues, we can have a conversation on Stephon Clark or Philando Castillo or Tamir Rice, and you'll find how many officers are uneducated about it. They don't pay any attention to it. Or if the conversation comes up and it's pro-police, they're willing to have it. But should you see it differently, oh, my God, man. You know, he's Black Lives Matter. He's a Black Panther. He's anti-police. Why? Why? And that's what we talked about last week. The profession is incapable, unwilling, or just doesn't want to look at itself in the mirror, take the weave out, take the eyelashes off, and look at itself and say, man, I ain't all that. I need to do some changes. And we need to have a self-examination. Go ahead, brother.
I'm not just pulling the card, I don't do that just for sake, but just for a point. I think it's just a fear of the Black man. It's some innate fear that a lot of European American officers and some Hispanics have of Black people. So therefore they tend to treat us differently when they see us, as if they feel comfortable. If they're pulling up on a white guy, right, they might be a little, not relaxed, but they might not be as intense. But if they pull up on somebody who's physically threatening them, i.e. black skin, sagging pants or whatever, I think that's a big problem. I do. I think it's a really big, one of the issues why so many officers, overreact when it comes to arresting and detaining and talking to people of color.
Well, Gus, I think that I understand what you're saying, but I also can say now, one of the officers that shot Stephon Clark was black.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
One of the officers up there with Tamir Rice was black. I think the problem is deeper. I wish it was just a matter of a fear of black people or just simply racism. I wish it was that simple, because it would be a lot easier to deal with.
Right.
I think, like I said on the show before, I think that America, not just white folks, America, that's black, brown, tan, yellow, blue, purple, whatever. America is culturally conditioned.
Right.
To associate black with negative, violent, loud, disrespectful, America is, and I say that to say, in a lot of neighborhoods that you'll go to in the inner city, some of the black officers there may be no better than the white officers, and in some cases worse.
Yeah.
Because when society tells you you're nobody, and puts a lot of these conditions that all of us have to deal with, these discrimination and racist things on a daily basis, no matter, some of them are trivial or small. But when you deal with it enough, some people can't handle that, and they begin to self-hate. See, there's black folks that hate black folks.
Yeah.
Because they don't like who they are. They don't want to deal with some of the issues all of us deal with daily. It's just easier for me to fit in with this group over here that doesn't like me. And that may transfer a lot into what we see into policing. Do you come out, when you come out to the street, are you towing the company line, or are you out there to serve that citizen? are you so worried about being blue enough that you're not human enough? You're a robot. You're a Joe Friday out there. Why? Because you want that peer acceptance is more important than solving the problem up front. And see, people know when you're tuned out. People know when you don't care. People know when you're absent from the community. And that therein lies why we have this threat, why officers are under this threat. Now, last week we talked about some of this, Gus. People can say, well, and I agree, there is a hyperactive reaction to black people by a lot of officers. And then we looked at the contrast when I read off the white males who either shot up police cars, shot somebody, had a gun with them, threatening to kill the police, flipping off the bird, high-speed chases, every single one of them was taken alive.
That's right.
Because America is culturally conditioned to say it's white, it's safe. And that is proven in the fact that they're just now coming to grips with the fact that these school shooters are white. These mass shooters are white. And they're not telling anybody anything black folks didn't know.
Right.
That's the problem. How do we unravel this cultural conditioning? Telling black folks just behave and do what the police say and vote, that's not going to do it. But at the same time, there's only so much some folks will take.
Now,
you see what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But on the other, it was something else that you said too that I wanted a clarifying, answer because that kind of slipped me. What is the difference between a department having a requirement that you write so many tickets, or a quota that you have to write so many tickets? I mean, that's like a fine line, isn't it?
You know what? A lot of it is optics. What they do is they'll hide it in what they'll call a performance evaluation. And they'll say, well, this person has a lot more activity than you have, so therefore you're not doing as good a job as so-and-so. So, I mean, but you run into, okay, well, if you're grading me by what this guy did, then what is your scale that you graded him by? And then are you measuring prevention in there? Are you measuring the fact that, I may not write as many tickets or take people to jail on a barking dog ticket, but guess what? Nobody's car got broken into in my area. That person that comes in, their car is broken into, doesn't care how many tickets I wrote last night. That businessman that's got a $5,000 window broken out and $10,000 worth of property missing doesn't care how many people I took to jail because they got a stop sign ticket or warrant. Now, you got to put people in jail. I'm not against that, but you have to manage yourself. And you got to grade that officer's style. Because I can guarantee you the same ones where everybody gets a ticket and everybody goes to jail are the ones with all the complaints.
Yes.
Where you're constantly fielding complaints. And it's semantics. They hide it. It's hidden in there. And a lot of things that come down, you have, just like in your job, we may be told things in policing to do that aren't written down, and they're not going to be written down because nobody wants to be accountable for saying it. But then you have a culture that doesn't talk outside of itself. It doesn't matter whether you're 100% right. It doesn't matter if you're doing the right thing. See, we take this oath to be truthful and honest and testify and do the right thing and protect the citizens. But when there are certain things officers reveal, then the next thing you know, they have no whistleblower protection. You're a traitor. You're anti-police. The same things we talk about on this show, we sit in roll calls and go over. But there are officers who have a problem with what I do here because I'm talking to you all, as opposed to being in a room just talking to officers. That's what I talk about, that blue curtain, that tight, not talking to the community.
Right.
I don't know everything. But I like to, where you guys feel you can ask me, and if I know, I'm going to tell you. Or when we get to the topic, I'll give you what I think about it, and I'll give the facts that I pulled up on it. And people can bring facts and dispute me. They can call in 646-716-4621. And I'll give them all the time in the world. They may know something I don't know. But I think police culture is not changing. And part of the problem is it's that shield, that blue shell that keeps some people so empowered. They don't.
Right.
It's like they don't want people to know that they're human, that we have problems. We get divorces, there's alcoholism, there's everything you got in your job is in policing. Yes, there's a lot of stress in this job. Yes, it can be dangerous. But you know what? We're getting paid good money. Now, am I making what I'd like to make? No. But I don't have to go far to see folks making a lot less.
That's right.
And then if you don't like it, go somewhere else.
Right.
But we can't keep expecting the public to bow down to us. I mean, it's okay to appreciate what we do and all that is fine and good, and a lot of citizens support us. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you get the gratuities and the things that just go so far that it makes some of these officers have a big head, like I talk about in the God complex. And 2 or 3 years of some 22, 23-year-old guy getting that kind of acknowledgement from a community, it's very easy for him to see him or herself as more than they are. Now they're dictating to you and your house what you need to do to get your family together, and they may be a few years removed from the same age as your child.
All right. Right. That's respect.
You know,
that's respect.
You talked about the Chiefs. Remember the show we did? We talked about, you know, why don't we have people with masters and PhDs in human resources apply to be chief of police? Why not? The chief of police is nothing but a personnel manager. Human resource manager, they manage bodies. That's all they do. And politics. And that's the part they got to do that. I mean, that's just part of what they do. But they're not out there doing the police job. So why not plug a professional in there? Why not put a human resource manager in there that will look at some units where you don't have a representation of the community and say, we got a problem here? And a human resource manager won't go to that group or that unit and say, why aren't there any blacks or why aren't there any women? That human resource manager is going to go to the blacks or the women and say, why haven't you put in for this? Then they'll learn more truth about what's wrong with that unit than asking the unit about itself. Because only civilians can sanitize a lot of this mess that's in police departments. You know, Baltimore is not going to dig itself out of the hole that it's in without civilians going in there and doing it. It's just not going to happen. You can't legislate that stuff away. You know, Jeff Sessions, you know, the attorney general has gone in there and pretty much he's willing to throw consent decrees out the window. Why? Because these things don't address people that look like him. That's where we got to get out of that. We got to take people, when a group of people tell you there's a problem, do a study on it. Don't do a study to find where your intention is to prove there's not a problem. See, when I come to a car, Gus, I got two jobs there. Half of my job is to prove you 100% guilty, get enough probable cause to put you in jail. The other half of my job is to go there and prove that you're innocent. And if you have that mindset, that makes you operate on just the facts, what is there, whether you like it or not. And then you take action. And that's what needs to happen with policing, what's real and what's perceived.
Right.
And if you got to tell some officers goodbye, tell them goodbye. If you got to tell some police chiefs and administrators goodbye, tell them goodbye. That's the way of the world. You can't move your police department in a new direction carrying the same old leadership. That's not going to happen. And that's what happens in police departments. They bring in chiefs that are in the same image as what just left. And then they wonder why they don't see any more results.
Right.
You know, we talked about the styles of policing.
So help this out. So what do you think would help the department as far as personnel? Hiring from within? Or getting a commissioning a task force to find a chief from some other department across the country.
Don't let police departments examine themselves. Don't do that. That would be like me telling you at the job interview, hey, I'm going to go out the room. You interview yourself and then come out and tell me how you did. No, don't do that, man. See, that's the problem right there. You bring in an independent group. Bring in two groups. Bring in one group that's an independent group that studies police departments, and then bring in a team of human resource managers that are all civilians. And let them come in, because they're going to have a better perspective of what civilians want.
Right. That sounds like a good idea.
But you can't let police, you can't let them grade themselves. That doesn't work. Because who's going to come out and say, who's going to go to the chief who picks the people to do the study? Who's going to go in there and say, well, chief, you're screwing everything up. This department doesn't look good. This needs to change. Who's going to tell the chief what to do?
Right.
Nobody. So when you get these departments to say, we did a study, we surveyed our officers. No, officers are not going to be truthful. I'm sorry. Well, they didn't have to put their name on the form. You got 20 officers sitting in the room. You hand out some forms. You tell them, turn it in when they're done. They know who was in that room. And guess what? They know how you write.
Right.
I mean, that's why you don't get, there is no transparency even within. Sometimes the street officer meets the same resistance at a different level that the citizen meets. And there are a lot of officers, trust me, they're not going to talk maybe as much as I do, but there are a lot of officers in this country that hate the way things are. They do. Some of them Facebook me. They want change. And they'll tell me, God bless you for what you do, man. I can't. They'll fire me or they'll do this or that. And some of them don't want to put up with the ugly looks and you know, the snide remarks and whatever, you know, whatever else they do that I don't pay much attention. But, you know, they don't want to do that.
Right.
But when every one of these incidents happens, I know one thing. They troll these shows, and I bet they're able to go back and go, man, he just did a show on that 3 weeks ago. We did a, you remember we did the show on school shootings. What happened 3 weeks later, Parkland?
Right.
And everybody said, how'd that happen? Except for the people that heard that show. Because we knew it was coming.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I got my man, my ace, Tyrone K. Dunmore. Ty, your mic's open, brother. You can chime in anytime you want. Robert says on Facebook that our observation of good police versus bad police has to be somewhat different from Supreme Court, DOJ, and local police forces. Absolutely, Robert. That's what I'm saying. I want to see a civilian panel come in. Oh, not a civilian panel from the city that you live in. Oh, no. Because if the citizens in that city aren't already active in it, you don't have time to train people to be active. Go get an independent group. Go to South Texas and get your 5 or 10 civilians to bring them. And then maybe we send 5 or 10 from here out to East Texas and get some independent studies done. That would be a good thing to do. You can take some college graduates that are in political science. Have them do an internship. Have them do a critique or a study of your department. It ain't going to cost you nothing, city. Sometimes people are afraid of what they might find. How many city council people meet and talk with your officers that work that area and ask them what they think? Not what the chief thinks. The chief ain't out there in that car at 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon or standing out there on the highway when it's 105 working a wreck. And I'm not saying that to down the chief. That's not his job to be out there. But I'm saying just because you're the chief doesn't mean you know everything. You know a lot of things that the officers don't know. But when it comes down to what's going on in the street, they know. Because where are you coming when you get put under the gun?
Mm.
You're coming to the officers for answers. And who do the officers get their answers from? The citizens. That's assuming they get out the car and talk to them. That's the next part of the problem that does fall on the officers. Officer head and shoulders. Won't go in the convenience store. If they go in, they get a Coke, and they sit there and stare at people. They want to know what everybody's name is. If you want to meet, want to know what their name is, tell them yours. I'm Stan, not Officer Mason. They see my name tag, and they know what I do. If we approach people, people will approach us. If we open up, people will get to know us. One of the things I get the most, people say, well, I don't want those people in the community knowing my personal business. Guess what, officer? They already know. They know where you live. They know what you drive. They're standing behind you in the grocery store. They know you, but you don't know them. The big myth is that the low-income neighborhood is so violent. It's just, and there's a lot of violence, don't get me wrong, but it's so anti-police and it's so violent. If that were true, there would be no police officers, black, white, or otherwise, walking out of there at night going home. These poor communities recognize that they need policing. They're just asking that it be fair. They're just asking that it be, you know, non-prejudicial. They're just asking to be treated like people. They want you to talk to them the same way you talk to the hyphenated names in the gated communities on the other side of town. You can't go into these low-income communities and talk to people any kind of way. You can't go in there. I've seen this one, too. It's not popular. You can't go in there and stop the white guy in the black neighborhood just because he's white. Black folks don't own anything. We don't own any cities. That white guy might have grown up over there. If you got out the car, you'd know that.
Right.
Put that in the performance report. Does the officer know the principal's name of every elementary school in his area? Does the officer know the owners of the convenience stores in his area by name? Does the officer know at least 25 elderly single women that are widows in his area? There's some performance evaluation for you. And then take that and ask the chief. Does he know the principal's names? Or are we going to wait for a school shooting to figure that out? Does the police administration go to the schools and interact with the schools? If you want to know, and I've said it 1,000 times, chiefs, I know some of y'all listen. I know you do. I go to black barbershops and Hispanic barbershops. My barbers are both black and Hispanic. And I ain't seen none of y'all in either one of them. Neither one. But yet, you know, and I'll tell you why these politicians and these police administrators stay out of those barbers. They might go to Supercuts or something, but I'll tell you why they don't go in there, because they'll get an earful if everybody doesn't get up and walk out. And that's not just because an officer's white, because I know some black officers, if they walked in the barbershop, they'd clear out. You know, so, I mean, that we got to be open and just have that hard talk. And don't let police departments evaluate themselves. Like I suggested before, cities, y'all put out water bills because you want your money for that water. Put a questionnaire out. Put that in the water bill. Five little questions, circle the answer. Good, bad, or needs improvement. List five categories. Let the citizens mail that back with their water bill without their name on it. And then grade it. And then come back to the police department and say, well, this is how the citizens in this area feel. This is how the citizens in this area feel. And overall, they're not satisfied or they are satisfied or whatever. See, that's simple. It's not going to cost you anything. And it's going to be true. Michael Jones here on Facebook says, that's the problem with police officers. They don't want to engage with the community because they think they're better than us. No, you know what, Michael? I agree. I think a lot of them are uncomfortable. I think a lot of them are scared. I think there are some people, certainly not all, but there are some who come from the very same community that they're working in but feel that they've transcended above that problem now. So they don't have that time to go in there and look. You're absolutely right. They don't, and the community is not, I can tell you now, especially in the black community, they are not going to approach officers. These young people are not going to do it. If they don't know you, or they don't feel a reason to trust you, they don't want to talk to you, and they're not going to approach you. It's not. And before people go, that's because they hate police. No, they don't trust some of these officers. And that's because these young people are tired of seeing people that look like them shot and hearing nothing from the blue side. Nothing to say that was just outrageous what happened. That was too much. This was wrong. That was things we talk about here. That are provable if you look at some of these videos, and later on when it's safe for a lot of these political people to say something, they'll come out later. But when young people don't see you talking, they understand if it's in your department and you can't talk about it. But if it's something that happened in Baltimore, or it's something that happened in Boston or Dallas or whatever, and it's wrong, like the Sacramento deal, you ought to be talking about that. And tell people, I think the officers did great here. I think they did this right or that right. But this here could have been done differently. The same thing we do in training classrooms across this country with nothing in it but officers, when we look at these videos, say the same thing to the public. No, it makes the profession look bad. We can trash it in that training room, but, boy, we better not come out there and say it to you all to pay us. No. You know that old, when they were talking about the banks, they said too big to fail.
Right.
It's dangerous. We're in dangerous times right now. You've got a profession that needs reform. Bad. You can look at Dallas as a mirror of what's going on. When officers get fed up, they've got enough external pressures with all the things going on. Then you've got low pay. You've got crime that's out of control. And you're in danger up there of officers just saying, you know what? I'm going to FedEx and work, or UPS. I'm not putting up with this. What are you going to do?
All right.
What are you going to do for protection? And people better be watching Dallas, because we've talked about Dallas for almost a year now, and everything we talked about with Nick is coming to fruition. We're seeing it. And there's plenty of Dallases around this country that are waiting to happen because of bad management, whether it's on the city level or a department level. That's not the officer's fault. They don't manage anything but time. They're on personal time, and that's dictated by calls. But you don't hear nobody getting fired. Remember when I was talking about in some of the problems, I said politics, I said special interest group, rich folks, personal friends, money. See, that's where all that comes in. As long as it's that poor part of town. So now how do we fix it? How do we fix it?
That's difficult right there. It's not an easy fix. Because everybody's got to be on the same page.
But we do that by doing exactly what we're doing here. Have these hard discussions. Talk about these hard topics. If people's feelings get hurt, get over it. Don't come into the conversation with a black chip on your shoulder or a white chip or a blue chip. Because you know what? When you know, it's like surgery. It's messy. It's going to hurt. But eventually it gets better. But we've got to stop worrying about political positions, religious affiliation, and let's get to what's ailing the community. And most importantly, stop letting the same figureheads dictate the meetings. Bring the drug addicts in to talk about drug awareness. Hell, they know better than anybody. Bring your reformed drug dealers in to talk about drug dealing. They know better than anybody. Get the community involved at its lowest level, because the people at the lowest level of the community usually are the experts on the very conditions we educated people claim to be experts on, because we read a book that was written by some professor who went and interviewed 4 rehabilitated drug offenders. Get the drug offenders. Just put them up there on the mic themselves. Empower these people. Because you got to lift the whole community up. You can't just lift up those who are doing good in the community. That doesn't go anywhere. You got to dig down lower and get the ones who just, they want to do better, they don't know how. Get them with the folks who are doing well to teach them how, and then you get the people who have a lot to teach the ones doing well how to do better, and you lift up that whole community, you raise that property value, and I got a formula for that, and I've done it here, and I'm going to do a show on that. But it is achievable. It can be done. If I didn't believe in it, I wouldn't do all this. I'd get off work and come home Saturday mornings and go to bed. You know, I wouldn't do all of this. But I know it can be done. People want to be empowered. They don't want to be led. When people become followers, they lose their own vision. They lose their own purpose. Empower people and let them do them. And then incorporate what they do into your solution for what you want to do for the neighborhood. You know, we're a whole meal up here. Everybody's bringing something different, and all together we can make it work. But we got to put away, well, they're too white, or they're too black, or they're Republican, or they're Democrat. You know, I told somebody, I said, it's funny, if I'm found hanging in a tree tomorrow with a Confederate flag wrapped around my head, folks who don't even know me, are going to come all the way to Waco, Texas to march because I'm dead. But if somebody who looks like me shoots me tonight at work, there'll be some folks that might be upset, but there won't be no march. So it's not about me being dead. It's about who did it. We've got to get out of that mindset that say that the act who committed it will dictate my response to it. Be outraged at the act. That's why we've got so many of these school shooters. That's why we've got so many of these people that are walking in the public places shooting, because they get a pass. They get a pass.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be outraged at all of it. We should be just as outraged when one of these gangs shoots up somebody as we are when a cop does it.
True.
Yes, we seek a certain amount of justice from the police, and I agree they should be held to a higher standard than a gang member. I'm not disputing that. But we seem to be mute when we have the violence in the community, but then when we have somebody who just looks different or fits our social platform, then we'll get behind that. And it kind of makes us look contradictory when we decide our movements are based upon the color. If it's a cop, let's all protest and march. But wait a minute, all Muslims are not terrorists. Why don't we call white hate groups terrorism? See, we can't have it both ways. We got to look at the act. And until America pulls its head out and says, this is what it's going to be for everybody, the good, the bad, the ugly, the rich, and the poor. But we have to empower people. Education, hard talk, hard voting, vote some people out. Some of y'all might have to get up and walk out of some of the churches that you're in. I don't know. Now, I know everybody probably said, uh-oh. Well, if your church is sitting in the middle of hell and hopelessness, when you always got gun cases laying on the ground and stripped up cigars all over the place and beer bottles on the steps of the church, but yet you got no outreach from the church, that church is not affecting the community then. It's just a showpiece. Now, that's a sad indictment on the church. But when the drug dealers go hang out by the church, that tells you about the church. If you live in one of these communities, and you guys know what I'm talking about here, if you live in one of these communities where there's a drug house or a drug location within a block of the church, that tells you something about the church. You can come from out of town. You may not know where the drug house is, but you know if you make it to this church, just go a block in either direction. What does that tell you? And in the black community, church, that was our city hall. That was where we learned our social skills. That's where we learned all that. We have to reclaim all of this. All of it in order to have change. We got to get our communities right. At the same time, we're getting the police department right, because it's not going to do any good to have a reformed police department and a rotten community. It's not going to do anybody any good. You're going to have a bunch of good officers that are going to get fed up and leave. But a good community can hold a good police department to a higher standard of account. And it may not be in the city next to you, but if you get your city right, guess what? That city next to it, somebody in that city council is going to go, you know what? We need to do what they're doing. I don't talk about my city very much on here because my purpose isn't I'm not here to applaud them and I'm not here to trash them unless it comes up in the topic in the show. But I will say this. Yes, like any department, we have our challenges and no department is perfect. But I'll tell you, you know, my city has invested a lot in the quality of officers that we have. And they will fire you, and they will lock you up. We've locked up a few, as y'all have seen on Facebook. And the quality of officer that we have that goes out in the community, we don't have these protests and riots, and, you know, we don't have, even in our poorest towns, you know, our poorest neighborhoods, by and large, our officers interact with people out here. You can go into the all-black part of town, you talk to these white officers, they love working over there. They said, man, people are approachable. They'll talk to you. They'll come up and you know, you don't get any problems on call. And that's it contradicts the image that some people who live in the city never go over there have. But our city spent a lot of money to get that way. And I've been in those meetings, those neighborhood meetings, and I did them. There's a lot of cussing, and you got to do some cussing too. And when at the time when that happened, I had a chief that supported me, but he's sitting in those meetings red as a beet. But I had a female commander that backed me 1,000%. She said, you just tell it to him like it needs to be said. But when it came time to dig the sidewalk out, out from under 5 inches of dirt, cuss, I was there digging it out. When we had our cleanup day in the community, I was in there throwing stuff in the dumpster in my jeans just like everybody else. That's what it takes. Sure, there's some officers that say, I ain't digging no ditches, and I ain't throwing out no trash. You don't have to. Because for those officers that are absent in the community, especially the low-income community, I will tell you this. The people know who you are. Trust me. They know exactly who you are. And when you need them, they're not going to be nowhere to be found. They won't be in your corner. So I'm going to try to keep this show at about an hour. I went over about 3 minutes. I'm going to stand in here a little bit, let Tyrone get in here for a minute. Ty, what's up? What's going on, man?
Yeah, good afternoon, or good morning, I guess. Yeah, still good morning where you're at. Of course, I'm in the East Coast. I want to piggyback on what Gus said. I would agree with him to this extent. When he spoke about the racism, he don't like to use the race card. When people look at racism, for the most part, they're looking at skin color. And that's not the root of what this is all stemming from. The root of all this is stemming from the information, or should I say the defamation of the character of the people that they now look at when they have a cloudy and distorted view of us as a people. Yeah, I'm talking about us. I'm speaking for, they call us the minorities. The fact, again, that we call ourselves minorities means that we're in the minor leagues and we're still on the farm league and we're still being not acceptable yet till we get pulled up and be able to get down with the majors. Of course, because the majors are the majority rules. So when you say cultural conditioning, absolutely, but the cultural conditioning has been foremost perpetuated by the distortion of who we really are as a people, and not what we are today, what we became today, and then they go back just a little bit, what they call a period of slavery. So the worldview of what they call minorities or black people, per se, is always going to be this narrative of we're descendants of ex-slaves. So long as people look at us that way, it's already deeply rooted in the educational mindset of anybody. Whether it's a white person, black person, whoever, Latino person, when that narrative keeps playing time and time again, then what happens? We totally have lost a true sense of value. We don't have a true value of ourselves because, as once was said, above all subjects, history is best qualified to reward our research. Why do we even have to research it? Because, again, the world scope of what they call minorities is a very distorted, very ugly picture. It really is when you look at the world scope of how they view us. And we do ourselves the way we view ourselves. So that self-hate, I agree, whether you're a police officer or not, it doesn't matter. It's rooted. Because when they talk about our history, you've heard this, our history's been hidden. Then that means if it's hidden, that means we're absent. If it's been buried. If it's been buried, that means we're dead. If it's been distorted, that means it ain't clear. It's been fragmented. That means we're not together. It's been lost. That means we have to find or must be found. In many cases, people say our history was destroyed. That means we're not building or we're not built. So we first got to get back to the true sense of understanding when you say racism. Yeah, it's a race. Either we're running into it, we're running it, or we're running away from it. That's the race. And the ism is like any other ism. So we have to bring ourselves back to a good sense of dignity and pride, but that's not going to be done by the police profession or any other profession. That has to be done by the very people themselves who are subjected to that. And to give you a short example, when the Jewish nation came about in the narrative of being enslaved, one of the things they said was, never again never again. And they rose themselves up out of the narrative of being enslaved. And many times we don't do that. We don't raise ourselves up. We're still putting ourselves in each other down. We're doing this thing, which I call it's a form of historical hostile hysteria. So it's a sense of your mind, your spirit, your emotion, channeling this type of picture of yourself that now it carries out in the physical. So yeah, we can be outraged, but we know we really need to be enraged, because once we become outraged, we're already behind, as they say, the eight ball. Why? Because it already happened. Whatever we're upset about, it already happened. So unless we engage, that means to stay consistently proactive, that's only how we're going to make things happen. So
right.
We know we're going to have these things that continue to come up. And I'm going to leave on this point. Not only is it cultural conditioning, it's also criminal engineering. It's cultural bandits. It's stolen legacy. And until we recondition, like you recondition your car, or we can recondition our furniture, we got to recondition our whole thought process, how we think of ourselves, start number one, before we expect the world, the outside world, so to speak, to look at us any different. We have to resort and return back to our days of glory, greatness, and grace, not to this falling back into this guilt, because a lot of people think they're guilty. They even say, driving while black. I was born black. They make it seem like being a black person, a minority, you already got a strike against you. So that shows you that's a sense of some sense of I'm a victim now. I'm guilty by the fact that I'm this color or this ethnicity. So that also fuels a sense of apathy, which fuels what I would say further fuels things like drug abuse and alcohol being the number one. Honestly, being under this system of suppression, see, we want to come up to the major leagues. So when you come up, you get a sense of freedom. You made it. And that's why we're still singing songs like We Shall Overcome and all this other stuff, because
right.
We're still being kept down and suppressed. And as long as you keep suppressing people, they will ultimately become depressed. And when they become depressed, what are they going to do? They're going to resort to things. And you know what? It becomes not balanced. It becomes a sense of abuse, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's domestic abuse, whether it's alcohol abuse, whether it's drug abuse, whether it's abuse of power. One of these things, you know, we're going to resort back to that. And one of those things definitely we're going to do a lot is we're going to keep being overly sexual, because that's one of the things we can do that's really not criminal, other than in fact making all these babies and not taking care of them. But what happens in it? We're being irresponsible, so we keep fueling this ugly cycle. We release in the moment, because we're caught up in the moment, and then we're captured now for generations to come, be it a fuel that refueling a recycled tragic, what I would call, what do we call it, brothers and sisters? Somebody got to help me. It's can't think of the name. Well, anyway, this is criminal, and this is the things we continue to participate. Vicious cycle, that's
Insanity.
What I was going to say. Vicious cycle. So it's just like an air conditioner. You talking about conditioning? What happens when you don't have no Freon? Your conditioner will be blowing a lot of warm or hot air. And that's what a lot of
right.
us are doing. We're blowing a lot of hot air with warm air.
Yep.
So you know what? We got to chill. We can't get over emotional. We got to think ourselves into glory again. We know we're emotional. We know we're going to see things. But if we overreact, then that's not going to be the solution at all. And then you can't, again, blame other people, whether it's in the, as we call it, glorify the hood, or it's outside suburban America or even rural America. The world view on us is we don't value ourselves, and we have shown by the stuff we watch that we truly don't value ourselves. And starting up with ourselves. So it's easy to beat each other up. It's easy to come at
yep.
each other. That's another form of, it's easy to pop off and shoot or knock somebody out or break somebody's jaw or shoot them or beat up their sister, because we're not looking at each other as with family. And when I mean family, I'm not talking about even human family. Because they got laws on the books, what they say, cruelty to animals. And we're being very cruel to ourselves intellectually, emotionally, mentally, and yeah, it starts at home. So I'm not going to blame, I'm not going to put the blame on or look for law enforcement to help fix this problem there. Like you said, Stan, that you have your own set of problems in there. We got our
That's
cultural
right.
reconditioning that we have to commit to. And if we don't commit to doing that and raising up the level of consciousness, meaning the, and raising the sense of what, again, dignity, bringing out the best of us and dignity and pride, and not because you're black, because your behavior, because your investments, of your commitment, because of your neighborhood, because of the way you treat each other. These are the things we have to do. And until we start doing that, then I don't expect, if you want to say, the outside world or other ethnic groups or cultures to look at us any different. Thank you.
All right. Amen.
All right, brother. You know, well, like I said, truth be told, you know, that's what we're here for, to tell it like it is. Gus, I'm going to let you get in. Last few bites, appreciate you joining in, brother.
No problem, man. Of course, I enjoy it every Saturday, and it's my downtime at my job, so I'm good. The conversation was great, man. You learn, whether the subject is 2 weeks in a row or whatever, you still get something different out of every time you talk about it. You know, I'm agreeing with Tyrone. We're going to have, you know, to me, knowledge of yourself and your cultural conditioning, you're going to have to learn something, man, because I think it's more on us as opposed to fixing law enforcement. Because I think we react to law enforcement different than the way we've been reacting as people. I think law enforcement would be a little different, don't you? I do think that if we look deeply at ourselves and how, you know, especially the young brothers, how we react to law enforcement and always walk around with a chip on your shoulder, you know, it's got to be different. It's got to be different. And if you have more pride in yourself and your ancestry and your history, you would be walking differently, and 9 times out of 10, law enforcement ain't even going to bother you, man. So I really did enjoy the show today, man, so much. I do. I enjoy it every week, but I enjoyed it today. Especially.
Well, I appreciate you brothers being there, and you know, everybody on Facebook, Robert's on checking it out, and congratulations on his new grandson. And you know, all the people on Facebook that chime in through the week and add to the string on the show and follow some of the things I post. I'm working on putting a year-end calendar out. It's going to have all the show topics listed for the year, and I'm going to get that out. And you know, I understand that this is some tough talk that happens in here sometime, and I understand this is not for everybody to take up front. Some folks got to download it or play it and take it little bits at a time, but as long as you get it, you know, we're going to continue to talk about some of these topics, and some of them are going to make people angry and some of them will celebrate, but the only way we're going to get to the bottom of it is to educate. And, you know, I'll tell you things that I see or I know or I experience from the inside of policing, and I'll also tell you how I view some of these things as being black. I don't really separate the two, you know, because I am who I am when I go to work, and that's part of who I am. You know, you do your job, but I view things through a lens according to how I grew up, and that's what everybody does. So hopefully that comes in and you guys' experiences, and we can keep this going. But, you know, sometimes you just got to walk into the room and ask them,
what the hell's going on out here?
And then step forward with some solutions. And we're going to holler at y'all next week, same time next week, behind the blue curtain. Love you guys. Be good.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.